Well, in the regular caregiver support groups, generally we have people that come in very stressed out because they're dealing with their mom or their dad in early stages of dementia or some sort of physical ailment that they're having to take care of 24/7. And they don't know what to do. They're just out there by themselves. So when they come into a group of people that are already dealing with those situations, their stress level reduces just knowing they're not in it alone. And then we are able to provide speakers on different topics that are relevant to them. Anywhere from someone in the field of aging that deals with Alzheimer's disease and is on the cutting edge of all the treatment, all the way down to how can I get mom to take a bath. So home health care agencies come in and talk about those particular issues too. So there's just a wide range of different topics.
It's interesting you say their stress level goes down. There must be a lot of stories swapped before the meeting begins.
Well, and during the meeting, that's part of some of the meetings, that's all it is. You know, this is my situation. I don't know how to get the keys away from dad. He still wants to go drive. Or what do I do when they're going out of the house and at night and I can't tie them down. What am I supposed to do? So just a variety of topics, some that you can figure out and some that you can't even imagine. But by the time they leave, at least, if nothing else, they know they're not in it alone.
You say you have home health care aides come in and give some talks there. Do you ever do these with professional home health care aides? Try to solve their problems?
We do. Well, home health care agencies, of course, there are numbers of them in the area. And they do come in. They tell what they do in the community, anywhere from giving baths to people to medication assistance.
I was thinking more of, hi, I'm Bob. I work for Jim's Home Health Care Agency, and I'm just here as Bob saying, oh, the people I had to deal with at work today.
Well, they don't usually come in with those kinds of issues. Like maybe they have their own little groups in their agencies, but for the most part, when they come in as, how can I help you? Not, this is what I see every day, and how can you help me?
There's got to be a lot of dealing with family dynamics when it comes to caregivers. I mean, just from my own experience, it seems like there's always one person in the family who gets it all on their shoulders.
Right. Well, caregiving is definitely not for sissies. So, and that is true. There's usually one person in the family that, even from childhood, maybe has been, he's the one that always has his head on his shoulders and knows how to work through situations, or she's the one that can manage the money, or she's the one that's more compassionate. So it kind of trickles, you know, down, as you would say, to who's the best capable of taking care of the situation. It has to be somebody that has a great attitude, that has to have compassion, that is resilient, it's realistic, and somebody that's not going to be easily, depressed about having to take care of a situation. So family meetings are good in the beginning, to take a look at all the different dynamics in the family, who's going to be the one to take care of mom, or who's going to be the one to take care of dad, or the best case scenario is we'll all work together and here's the schedule. But that doesn't always work.
Is there a certain age of people that you deal with, or is it just run the gamut?
Well,
the caregivers, not the
patients. Yes. Generally speaking, the caregivers are older. I would say most of the caregivers I deal with are 60 and older. But there are some younger, depending on what the situation is. Of course, with Alzheimer's disease, there's early onset Alzheimer's and there's physical disabilities and people that are way younger than what you would normally think a caregiver would be ready to deal with. But yeah, the age should vary, but generally over 60, I would say, are my caregivers.
Are there different concerns for people who are dealing with a family member with Alzheimer's as opposed to dealing with someone with a disability who isn't mobile?
Well, absolutely, because the physical disabilities also, although are bad, generally speaking, most people that are just suffering from some physical ailment have all their capacity to consent still, and that may be even a little harder than dealing with someone that doesn't have the capacity to consent, because they're going to be more likely to argue with the kind of care that you think they should get versus what they should have. And then the people with that are dealing with folks with dementia and Alzheimer's disease, is a whole different dynamic, of course. One of the books that we recommend people to read is The 36-Hour Day, because that kind of speaks to a 24-hour plus caregiver, where you're always answering the same questions over and over again with someone who is in the late stages of dementia. You're always battling with what you can get them to do and what they won't do, eating, sleeping, you know, taking medication. So all different kinds of dynamics there, but I would say there is a little bit of difference between just dealing with someone with a physical ailment versus the cognitive problems.
If you were to have a bunch of caregivers in the room right now, and I asked them this question, my life would be so much easier if someone would just, what would they say?
Getting the right kind of care in the home to keep their loved one in the home as long as possible, as long as is reasonable, I should say. And that's a challenge, because if insurance won't pay for the kind of care they need, and they don't have the money to do it, that's a big, big problem. That's where we come in, trying to provide services in the home. So I would think that if they could have all of the care for their loved one in the home, giving them some respite out of the home, I think that's the biggest need.
I would imagine getting that break a few times a week must be something that is dear to them.
Well, it's something that we kind of say over and over again, you need to take care of yourself, and it's kind of redundant, and people don't want to hear that, because they also have a sense of guilt about, I'm the only one that can care for mom. So how can I go out and have a good time when I'm feeling guilty about what's going on with them?
Talk a little about early onset Alzheimer's. This has to be something that surprises not only the person with the condition, but the caregiver. Like, you know, I didn't sign up for this.
Well, I just recently read the book Still Alice, which is about early onset Alzheimer's, and it kind of hit home, because the woman in the book, of course, is my age, and it's the kind of situation where you're beginning to question your own cognitive abilities when you're reading something like that, because it starts out so subtle. It's scary to know that this disease can hit you at any age, and it's progressive and degenerative. So it's a scary thing. It really is, for somebody in their 50s to begin not only not knowing what this piece of paper is, but not knowing what you should do with it, you know. So it's just really, really scary. I haven't had a lot of caregivers come in talking about early onset Alzheimer's with the people they take care of, but I have shown them the film, and it makes them more ready to recognize symptoms in the people they care for or in themselves.
When someone comes in to see you the first time, What do you talk to them about?
Well, I generally say, tell me what your situation is. Let's hear what your situation is, and then by knowing what they're dealing with, I know where to carry the conversation. Generally speaking, after they finish telling what's going on with them, I give them a broad overview of the Council on Aging services, because most of the services that we provide are going to hit them at some point. They're going to need the services that we provide, so we immediately try to plug them into whatever we can provide, and then try to reach out in the community to other services. So first thing is, tell me what your situation is, what can we do to help you, and then we go from there.
In the end, do most caregivers end up having to put somebody into a facility?
In the end, yes. For the most part, they do. A lot of them, even if they go to facilities and they get to the end stages of Alzheimer's or dementia, sometimes they prefer to bring them back home and have hospice care come in, or hospice care can be called into facilities too. So that's where they are. So that they struggle with that again because of the guilt of putting them into a facility, but A lot of times once they do it, then they realize they're getting better care there. I'm taking better care of myself, just visiting them two or three times a week rather than being their 24-hour caregiver. So yes, we do have information for them too about the assisted living as well as skilled nursing care in the area, and able to provide them and hook them up with different facilities too.
After that happens, do they still come see you?
Oh yes. In fact, this last year we lost a lot of our folks to death, and some of the caregivers even have returned to the meetings after that. In fact, I had a little meeting, kind of a remembrance meeting for some of the ones that we lost a few months back, and it was very, very healing, I think, not only for them, but for new people that came in to hear those stories and hear how much it helped to come in and talk to people in similar situations.
So you're building your own little community here.
Absolutely.
All right. Interesting, you mentioned grandparents raising grandchildren. That's got to be a whole different kind of support group, isn't it?
It is. I often say, although some people would see it as negative and depressing to go and hear people talk about their concerns, it really puts your life into perspective when you're sitting around the table talking to hearing all these situations, talking to these folks. Grandparents raising grandchildren is a growing trend in the state of Florida as well as the United States. We have a group at a school in Navarre, because it was more convenient when they dropped their grandchildren off to stay for an hour rather than trying to come again to an evening meeting. But we also do provide that option, the evening meeting here, and we provide childcare for that meeting. Again, we have a wide range of situations going on there too, between people that have just taken, not necessarily even custody, but just taking care of their grandchildren because of a dynamic in their adult children's lives, all the way to people that have made the decision to adopt their children and that their grown children have given up parental rights. So again, we have speakers come in. In fact, next month we're going to have an attorney come in and talk about family law issues. That's a big question in the grandparents raising grandchildren support groups, is how do I get help? How do I get custody of my grandchild when my adult child is not willing to give up parental rights? What am I supposed to do? So the big discussion in the past few months has been grandparents' rights in the state of Florida. So we've been writing the congressman and trying to get some answers about that, because technically the laws in the state of Florida say it's best for the children to be with their birth parents. If you said that to the grandparents, they would say, oh, but I'm their parent. I'm taking care of them. Why can't the law change? It's a whole different dynamic, but again, it puts a lot of things into perspective for you if you just come and sit in one of those meetings.